Hey, welcome to another edition of Nude Hippo, the podcast, the premier episode of this generation. There's been so many different generations of Nude Hippo. This is a new one. I'm Tony Lozano. Woohoo! Now, every week, I'm going to be doing a new episode where I sit down, not nude, new, where I sit down and do a one-on-one discussion with a special guest of some sort. Today, it's Windy City Live's Ryan Cheverini. And with me will be one of the Anne Friends will be producing this. This week, it's Kimmy Spoons!
Hello!
Kimmy is running the board for me, which is very complex. We're in a very... I don't even know where we are. Are you excited about the whole Ryan Cheverini thing?
Ooh, yeah.
And we've already taped this. You were there for that.
Exactly.
What do you think about Ryan?
Well, I'm trying to be like PG because when I talk to him, other people, everyone just comments on his attractiveness. Uh-huh. But I think he's also a well-spoken man and right. What he does is very sweet.
Wait. So when you say you'd speak to other people and they speak about his attractiveness, what do you have to be PG about then?
Well, I don't know. I also now have met this man. I don't want to be like, you know, talk about his attractiveness because I'm trying to think of a higher level and not commenting just on someone's physical features, even though that's the first thing people bring up because he's also on TV.
Nah, I'm not gay, but I would say if I was, yeah, I could see Ryan. Ryan's a very good looking guy. He's been at Windy City Live for a long time, and he just came out with a new song. This is his second song. This one is called This Is Country. Do you know about the song? It's a tribute to
his mother.
Yeah, his late mother. He already had a song about Chicago back in 2014 about Chicago, called, by the way, Chicago, huh?
Oh, clever.
He originally was going to call it CTA, but the CTA wouldn't allow him. See, if you knew anything about the band Chicago, they originally were named CTA, and they had changed their name to Chicago.
Well, yes, the CTA doesn't want to share its name with anyone.
No, they don't. Anyway, so this is a song that will raise funds for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. His younger brother, Zach, took his own life back when he was age 20, back in 2009. We talked about all of this before the song came out. So this is a recording from a little while ago, but you're finally going to get to hear it now. It's a really touching and moving and brilliant story because this man has accomplished a lot of things, but he's also been through a lot of things. We got to sit in his office at the Windy City Live Studios. What did you think about his office?
It had lots of memorabilia everywhere.
Yes, it did.
That's what stuck out. I didn't know to look at him, focus on what I'm doing, or look around the room.
Yes, it was like a little museum. I loved it.
Yeah.
Here's Ryan Cheverini from Windy City Live.
The following is a Tony Lozano podcast, an Opie show on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. This is Nude Hippo, the podcast.
Okay, I'm now sitting in the Ryan Cheverini office, the museum of all Ryan stuff.
Pretty small, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, these days people don't have offices anymore. I mean, a lot, especially the new trend is open offices, you know, so
it's I'm lucky that we can close the door. Exactly. So yeah, I do have a couple of things in here. The Travolta, too bad you can't, this is a radio show
right.
You can't see it, but dressing up as Travolta, that was actually so cool because I got to show that to John.
Oh, yeah.
I interviewed him. He's one of my favorite interviews, and I interviewed him just recently with him and his wife. They couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
And at the very end, I said, John, I got to show you this. And he got the biggest kick out of it. I know he's an actor, so he could have been faking it. But he was like, that's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. You know, it was pretty cool.
You get to dress up in these costumes for mostly Halloween, right? But you what's it like? First of all, what's the process of picking the costume? Like Travolta, did you pick it or did someone come up to you and go?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So I love Elvis, right? So when we did Halloween, we did like Stars Gone Too Soon.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, done. Elvis, easy.
Right.
Done.
Right.
When we did the 70s show, we were kind of like throwing around some ideas like, who has like elaborate costume? And the first thing that came to mind of most of our staff members was like that white jumpsuit Travolta wears in Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
We're like, oh, that's going to be great. You know, he's got the big hair, you know, the cleft in the chin, you know.
And you know the exact pose you're going to do.
Yeah, oh yeah.
With a finger up in the air.
Exactly.
And down. Yeah.
We went out and shot like that. We recreated that like pizza scene where he's walking down the street. You know?
Right.
Goes to Lenny's.
Yes.
So it's pretty cool. So it's kind of a collective thing.
Yeah.
But next year, I shouldn't tip this off, but I'm going to.
An exclusive.
Yeah, for Halloween, we're always running out of ideas now. We've been doing the show 8 years, so it's like, how many Chicago themes can you come up with, right? It's like, we've already done Chicago Legends. We've done, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. So next year, I want to do characters from your favorite movie of all time.
Okay.
And my favorite movie of all time is Back to the Future.
Oh, okay. And so who would you be?
Well, I think I've dressed up as Doc Brown before, because this is a great costume,
Marty.
Right? Yeah.
Marty. Great Scott.
But I was thinking maybe Rokan will be Doc.
Yeah.
I'll be Marty with the, you know, the red vest jumpsuit. Yeah. And then we got to get a DeLorean, which actually won't be hard to do. I didn't realize how many DeLoreans are around until 2015, because remember the whole, the Cubs were supposed to win the World Series in Back to the Future 2.
Yes.
There's all these like DeLorean clubs, and we had a bunch of DeLoreans like come by the show. And
so you know a guy that could get you DeLoreans.
Yeah. I got to drive like six of them that year. It was so crazy. So we got to pull up in the DeLorean for the show. So yeah, that's the tip off.
Yeah. So you've been doing the show for 8 years now. It's coming up on 8 years, right?
Yeah, 8 years. Yeah. 8 years. Today is 13 years to the day that I got hired at ABC7, and it will be 8 years on May 23rd, I believe, for Windy City.
Now, when you first got hired here, obviously you didn't think, oh, I'm going to be a talk show host at one point. What did you just started off doing weekend sports?
I started off, I replaced Brad Palmer.
Oh, sure. Remember? Yeah, the professor.
The professor.
Absolutely.
I replaced Brad Palmer. He had been here 21 years, so like big shoes to fill. Yeah. You know, everybody loved him, and he was quirky, and I got a chance to meet him a couple of times.
Yeah.
So here comes this, you know, 20-something-year-old kid replacing, you know, Brad Palmer. So, and I had to learn a lot. Like, my grandparents lived in Chicago, but I was born, you know, on the West Coast, and then I lived in Colorado for 10 years.
Right.
So I really had to, like, you know, hit the pavement and get in the books and get on the internet and start learning all of the Chicago, you know, legendary things. I mean, look at the posters I have up here. Sure. You know, you're seeing Dave Duerson and, you know, Mike Singletary and all the legends on that poster, the 85 Bears. But it's like when I first got here, I had to learn all those things.
Yeah.
And that was so important
because
we all know how Chicago is. Mm-hmm. This is not an easy city for transplants, especially when you first get here.
Exactly.
And I remember I first got here, the first week I was here, they were killing me on the radio.
Oh, really?
Oh, they were killing me.
What were
the
they saying? Were they saying that you were mispronouncing anything?
No,
or
they were just like, who is this kid?
Oh, so
I had highlights in my hair. I was like, this kid's not a Chicago kid. Yeah, and so they were, you know, it's like they hired, ABC hired an outsider.
Right.
You know, so I took a lot of grief. So it took a little while, I think, to adapt. And, you know, Peggy Kaczynski actually paid me a nice compliment. Years later, she told me, she goes, you know what? What I always remember when you came to town, when you went into the locker room, you laid back in the beginning and you let the seasoned veterans do their thing and ask their questions first.
Right.
And then you got in and asked your questions because there definitely is like a hierarchy in those circles.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
You're the new guy and you go in there and there's 10 reporters around and you're jumping in asking questions right away.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, hey, what are you, dude? You know, step back.
Yeah.
So I think the etiquette part is important when I first got here.
You got the respect of your...
Of the people that have been here a long time.
Right.
And I asked a lot of questions, learned a lot from the Howard Sudberrys and, you know, all the people that have been here and have been doing it a long time, you know. I think that was the biggest thing. But I remember getting here, I was a sports reporter, and I thought, I'm going to be here 2 years, and then I'm going to...
You didn't think you were going to have the Brad Palmer legacy of being here for two decades?
No, I thought I was going to do 2 years and then probably go somewhere else, maybe go to L.A. or something.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, I didn't know if I could handle the winter and the weather. And, you know, my grandparents tell me, oh, I moved out of there because it was ridiculously cold. That's why I left. So I never thought I would be here 13 years and staying probably for the rest of my career.
Yeah. When you were doing sports, was there a lot of politics in interviewing people? In other words, you know, if you wanted to say something about a player, you couldn't be too harsh because you also have to, you know, get that access, get that relationship. How did you balance that dynamic?
It's the hardest thing to do because relationships are everything in our business.
Right.
So be able to have a guy trust you and give them your phone number, their phone number, and be able to contact them. Yeah. You're sort of friends now.
Right.
But then they get busted for DUI or whatever, and now you got to report it.
Yeah.
You know, I think the biggest thing is every, or they make a crucial mistake, in a game. I remember Champ Bailey once called me out. I was reporting for the Broncos, and I said something about a guy making a rookie mistake. I'm on live TV. Mm. Champ Bailey did not like that. He wasn't the rookie I was talking about. I was talking about one of his teammates.
Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't like that.
Yeah.
And he kind of told me about it on live TV, and it was like uncomfortable. Oh. It was, and Champ and I laugh about it now.
Yeah.
He's actually a great guy, but he was frustrated. They just lost.
Yeah.
And he didn't like that I was calling out his teammate.
Yeah.
But I think I learned from that moment too, that every player I've ever become close with has always said, you've always been incredibly fair.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You've got to be fair. So it can't be personal. If a guy drops the interception and he loses the game, or something happens with Cody Parkey, I think that the whole thing is you have to be a little bit empathetic, and you have to be professional.
Yeah.
And in, let the fans do all of the heavy, heavy opinion stuff in that moment.
Yeah.
You got to report the facts, right?
Right.
And if a guy gets in trouble, you got to report the facts.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes, if you know that their character is strong and it's good, then you can at least say, hey, I've known this guy for 5 years and he's always been upstanding to the media.
Right.
And I think you can kind of balance both sides there.
Have you developed real friendships through any of these? You
know, absolutely. And Desmond Clark's one of my really good friends. Yeah. Anthony Adams, one of my really good friends. We still chat. We, you know, we don't get together as much as we want to, but we have him on the show.
Yeah.
And, it's special, and it's kind of rare to really keep that bond, but it's nice. When I was hosting a show called the Chicago Huddle, a Bears show, I got to pick the Bears I wanted to co-host with me.
Okay.
And these were some of the first guys I chose, and they've never forgot that. And I'm like, hey, you were the first guy that put me on TV, gave me a show.
Yeah.
You know, including Lee DeWise from American Idol. Remember, he went on to win American Idol. He was the house band on the Chicago Huddle for 2 years, making no money.
Yeah, right.
Just getting TV exposure.
Yeah.
And we chat now, and he's like, yeah, remember those old days? You know? So it's really special when you can do that.
Yeah. And how was it leaving sports, going to Windy City Live? Because now that's a different animal. And I know that we're talking almost 8 years ago, and you've been doing this. This is what you do. But what was it like originally flipping over from sports to this?
You really had to block out all of the people that said you were making the biggest mistake of your life.
And there
I had
was.
A lot of people saying that.
Yes.
A lot of people saying that.
They're like, I remember
you're making
hearing,
the biggest mistake of your life. I mean, and you're going to replace the Oprah show? Come on.
Right.
You know, this. You never want to be the person that replaces Oprah. You want to be the person that replaces the person that replaces Oprah.
Right.
Right. And so it was difficult. I think it was difficult, like, for my parents to read the stuff online.
Sure.
Because there was a couple articles that were pretty nasty, you know.
Yeah.
And for me, I always wanted to transition into the entertainment world at some point.
Yeah.
Did sports for 12 years. It was really fun in my 20s, meeting all your childhood heroes, you know.
Yeah.
I still remember meeting, you know, John Elway for the first time, Jerry Rice for the first time. It was really cool meeting these stars. But then when you get into your 30s, then, you know, the lifestyle is tough. Nights, weekends, holidays, Christmases, I miss funerals.
Sure.
You know, it's a really, it's a sacrifice that a lot of students now don't understand.
Right.
When I have interns and stuff, and they go, oh yeah, I want to start in Chicago, I laugh. I'm like, I started in Great Falls, Montana, making $500 every 2 weeks. And I was happy to do it with my shag carpet apartment, studio apartment. You got to have that hunger to want to do it.
Well, not only that, I always tell interns, I'm like, you want to start in those markets because you're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Yep.
And you don't want to be remembered in the big market for making those mistakes.
Right.
So learn your craft.
Right.
Figure out. And the people there will have more time. In this city here, it's a little more cutthroat. They don't have time to really hold your hand.
Right. So, I always say, if livestock could talk, they know all my mistakes, Montana.
That's
right. But making the transition, I was excited to do it.
Yeah.
I was nervous to do it. You know, we get so comfortable on TV, and now I'm like outside of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And so the first year, it was like, man, this is challenging.
This is really you. This is no longer just reporting on someone else. This is your personality, your wits, your smarts.
My
everything.
Opinion, all of those things. Today we talked about Kylie Jenner becoming the first, quote, self-made billionaire, and I just couldn't help but laugh. Like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
Self-made billionaire, really? So I love being able to share my opinions on not only on pop culture, but, you know, we've tackled some really difficult topics.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the gun issue, you know, the mass shootings issue, which I've been personally affected, and I've lost people.
You were affected by the Las Vegas shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when that happened, and two friends?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two friends that were there separately.
Yes.
you know, including my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law was one of them. And so the fact that I had a chance to voice my opinion without being a, quote, journalist, because, you know, you journalists cannot express their opinion as a news person.
Right.
And the fact that I got to do that because they embrace our opinions.
Yeah.
I feel more at home. We do our first 20 minutes every day without a commercial.
Yeah.
And I love that. We get to jump around a lot of topics. Mm-hmm. And now, instead of interviewing just athletes, you get to interview people that have affected the world like no other.
Right.
You get to interview your favorite Hollywood movie stars, which is fun.
Yes.
And you get to just show that you're more about scores and highlights.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
It used to be every time I'd go out to dinner and be like, hey, who should I draft on my fantasy team? And I'm like, dude, I don't even have a fantasy team, you know, because I needed a break from sports.
Sure.
And I was burned out.
Sure. It's something that you love, but you're forced. I explain it this way. It's like you're forced to eat ice cream. You may love it, but if you eat a lot of it, you get sick and tired of it. Same thing as sports. You can't leave if the game is going badly. You're the one that told me this.
I've always made that same analogy, but with adult film stars.
I went with ice cream.
But seriously, like, people go, why would you say that? I'm like, well, think about it. Like, people, you know, love making's great. But if you're doing this every day,
it's a routine.
It's terrible.
Right.
So that's how sports became for me. And it's like, now I get to really sit back, enjoy it, watch it.
Right.
Watch it as a passionate fan now, because I genuinely like to watch it as a fan. I mean, I hurt when Cody Parkey missed it too. You know, so it's a lot more enjoyable. And I got to, you know, exercise muscles that I didn't have before and kind of build up those things like we were talking about off air.
Yeah.
You know, you learn different talents. And hosting is a unique talent.
Absolutely.
And watching good interviewers is really, you get a great appreciation for it.
Yeah.
So, like recently, Gail King just interviewed R. Kelly.
Right, right.
She did a great job on the interview. And as a person that interviews people, I always admire the interviewer and how they handle certain situations, what the follow-up question is.
Right.
And being a good listener is everything, right?
Yes.
So it's like when you get on the telephone with somebody and you're talking to them, that's how I kind of compare, I try to talk to students about interviewing. If you're not listening to what that person's saying, then you have no comeback for them.
Right.
You got to think about interviewing as a telephone conversation because as we're looking at each other, we really got to be listening to each other. It's like when you meet someone in a room and you're like, hey, hi, I'm Ryan. Hey, I'm Steve.
Yeah.
And then 2 seconds later, you don't remember that person because you're so focused on shaking their hand and trying to look at them that you didn't listen to them at all. And interviewing is very much like that. You have to really engage in the listening part so that you can be your own curiosity will lead to the next question.
Do you remember John Callaway? Legendary news anchor here, did Chicago Tonight, launched it.
I know who he
is. Great man.
Yes.
My first interview with him, I came back from a trip, so I didn't even do any show prep. I literally landed that day, and I interviewed him, and I did not read his book. I left the book at home, and he's like, did you read my book? And I pulled it out and put it on the desk, the crowd cheered. He goes, no. Did you read the book? I went, no. And I learned just from doing, he was a great interviewer, so he made the interview fabulous. But I was so unprepared to do this interview. So the next time I read the book, I watched everything he did. I was so into it. And I did another interview, and it was a horrible interview just as well, because I was overprepared. I was no longer listening. I was more into going over the questions. And those two interviews taught me the art of interviewing, which is know your stuff, but just have a conversation. This is all this is.
And always let them tell the great anecdote.
Yes.
You know, the great story. So, like, I was interviewing Chaz Palminteri, who I love A Bronx Tale.
Yeah.
Just interviewed him.
Yeah.
And I had read about this crazy story with him, that he was a struggling actor, and he was doing a one-man show of A Bronx Tale, his life. Mm-hmm. And then he kept getting offered money, $250,000. He said no, because he wanted to be in the movie.
Yeah.
$500,000. He said no because he wanted to be in the movie. He had $200 in his bank account. $1 million. He turned it down. And then he said, then I read something about Robert De Niro made this happen. So basically, when he came on the show, I knew this story, but I set him up to tell the story.
Right.
You know, like, Chaz, I know there's a crazy story about the way that this whole thing came about.
Yes.
And let him tell the story. He did. He went into it. The $250,000, the million. Then he said, then Robert De Niro's in my dressing room after a show.
Right.
And he tells me, I want you to be in the movie.
Right.
You should be in the movie. And if you shake my hand, I'll direct it and I'll make this movie happen.
Awesome.
And boom, and it was great. And the whole crowd goes crazy, you know, but never steal the thunder of the person. Because at the end of the day, when you're interviewing someone, it really is about their story and what they have to say instead of like feeding someone lines like, hey, I read that you turned down $200 million for the movie. Don't give it away.
Right.
Even if you know it.
You don't have to show that you're the smartest person. That's the audience doesn't care about that.
Set them up.
Absolutely. Johnny Carson used to say that he was just there to put the spotlight on the guest. It wasn't about him.
And all the great interviewers do that.
Yes.
You know, I actually love Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
We had Jimmy Kimmel co-host a whole hour, and not only is he the wittiest guy you've ever met,
right,
but he's good at setting other people up. Yeah. And if you watch him do an interview, he's not only is he a great listener, but he comes back with something so quick.
Right.
It's really amazing.
Yes.
You know, so that I think learning from others, just as like when I was doing sports, you're watching the guys that like Gian Greco, who are the best in the business, and learning their techniques.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with hosting. People go, you make it look easy. Well, that's a thank you. That's like the nicest compliment.
Yes.
If someone ever says you make it look easy, or you're exactly like you are on the show as you are in person, that's a great compliment.
Right.
Because once you do thousands of hours of TV and you're not on a script, your true personality should come out. If it doesn't, there's something really wrong.
And that will work in your favor because then people connect with you. I mean, people really want to know you, and they could tell when you're not really being you.
Right. So, and we've all seen people on TV that are faking it.
Absolutely.
And you can see right through them.
Yes.
They might be able to fool. You can fool some of the people some of the time. You can't fool everyone all the time.
Right.
So being yourself and being authentic is so true. If you don't know everything about that topic, that's okay, and it's okay to say it. I remember Larry King came on, and he said, always be honest with your viewers, your listeners.
Right.
He goes, I remember when I first came on the air, the light went on, my heart was beating, I was filling in for this guy.
Yeah.
He knows the date. Because I said, what happened on September 22nd, whatever, 1938, year it was? He goes, it's my first day on the air. I go, you still remember that? He goes, absolutely. And he told me that he was frightened.
Yeah.
He goes, I went on the air. I don't remember half the things I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I was honest with the listeners. And I said, hey, this is my first day on the radio.
Right.
And I might make some mistakes. And I hope that you're okay. And you're going to give me a chance.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool. Yeah. And I kind of learned that. Like, if we're doing a segment about biochemistry, you don't always have to act like you know everything, even if you've done your homework.
Right.
You know, and you should do your homework, but at the same time, we have Neil deGrasse Tyson on.
Sure.
And if Neil's speaking in these crazy, and he's pretty good about dumbing it down for laymans, but if he's speaking over people's head, I say, Neil, nobody's grasping this right now. At least I'm not.
Right.
Tell me this in layman's terms. Yeah. And then, because the people at home generally are the same, and they're going to go, wow, yeah.
Yeah. I've always said this, exactly. If you don't know something, there's a chance there's a good portion of your viewers are also the same. When you first started on Windy City Live, how much did you know about Val outside of TV? Did you work with her before? When did you, from the point of going on the air to a point of meeting her, how long of a span was that?
Well, it's so crazy, Tony, because we did an audition that was like American Idol to get this gig, right? So there was like 500 people wanted the job.
Yeah.
They flew in the top 140 candidates or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had a party across the street, a cocktail party at the Wit.
Okay.
The night before auditions, a cocktail party, real smart, right? But they had packets of everybody you were going to audition with the next day, and they didn't even have a packet for Val because Val and I weren't in the first bundle together.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's first group. So I looked at all the eight people I was going to audition with, and I went and found them.
Yeah.
That was the whole idea.
Yeah.
You try to get a little bit of chemistry the night before so you're not just looking at a stranger on set.
Right.
Val was not one of those people. Did not know Val.
Right.
Did my eight auditions, got called back. This was a months-long process. They kept calling us back and kept calling. So then they finally started pairing Val and I together, and we had a really good audition.
Yeah.
Didn't know her from anybody. Yeah. I knew she was on WGN.
Right.
I knew that's pretty much all I knew about her.
Yeah.
And I knew, you know, I heard that she was fun and bubbly, which she absolutely is. So we had a really good audition. They brought us, paired us again, and they just kept whittling it down.
Yeah.
And I didn't know they were going to pair us together.
Right.
But she didn't know much about me. I didn't know much about her.
Yeah.
But it was the only good thing is once they named us co-hosts, we had a couple of months where we had to come in the office every day and just do nothing.
Yeah,
right. Like they needed us to come in the office so we could be on the payroll. The show hadn't launched yet.
But that sounds like a good opportunity for you two.
It was great. Right. We got to know each other. I got to see all the pictures of her kids and, you know, and learn about her family, learn about her background.
Yeah.
And then we started over time doing these mock TV shows in like a conference room.
Okay.
We'd sit around a table.
Yeah.
They'd give us some topics.
Yes.
And we would just chit-chat about it. And this was trying to build that rapport.
Right.
So now it's like funny. We don't even want to look back at those old audition tapes. But yeah, we didn't know each other from Adam. But we always say, boy, at the end of the day, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Like putting us together.
Yeah, they had the vision.
Yeah.
Well, you guys now, and I don't know when this happened, but you seem like you're siblings. I mean, that is the chemistry. When did you feel that you really were clicking together on camera?
You know, it's hard to say when it actually happened, but absolutely brother and sister relationship is what we have.
Yeah.
People at home sometimes want to believe we should get married, and we're like, oh, no.
No, it's sibling because it's the love-hate thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, we bicker a little bit, but it makes for good TV.
It's the absolute, like, are you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
But not in the sense that I hate you, in the sense that you're my sister, but I still think you're crazy.
Absolutely.
And, and she does that to you as well, equally.
Yes, especially when we talk about dating and relationships. Yeah, I posted something recently.
And you
recently
both have different
that.
Styles.
Yes, yes, very different on that way. But you know, it's funny because, our lives are very different too.
Yeah.
So we're around the same age.
Yes.
But, you know, she's single mom, two kids. Her kids call me Uncle Rai, Uncle Rai. And, you know, I've seen her kids grow up from the time Max was like 3 years old when this show got going. And he's 11 years old now.
Yeah.
So, and now her daughter is, I went to her sweet 16.
Yeah.
And they literally call me Uncle Rai. So it's so cool. I can't say exactly when that clicked, but more than ever. I mean, we're just so close, and we really complement each other. And I think in the beginning, say you put two athletes on a team, on a basketball team, and you say, okay, go out there and win.
Right.
Both athlete is trying to shoot three.
Yeah.
Both athlete is trying to, you know, score when the clock is ticking down.
Right.
Now it's all about Pippen and Jordan. And not saying that we're Michael Jordan of co-hosts, but I'm saying chemistry of
you balance
being able
each other out.
Sometimes Pippen feeds Jordan, and sometimes Jordan feeds Pippen.
Yeah.
And on different days, both can be stars, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that's the way we look at it. It's more about setting someone up. Like, we had a really funny moment just recently about, I posted on my social media about the whole dating thing and she about beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and I dated a woman that you didn't think was attractive, because she said you'll never date a woman not attractive. I'm like, I dated a woman that you didn't think was attractive, and I caught her off guard. She's like, oh yeah, whatever. And it became a really funny moment, and then after the show she goes, see how I set you up? I threw you an alley-oop. I was like, you don't remember that. It was an accidental alley-oop. But that's what it's all about. It's all about trying to set the other person up now.
Yeah.
And like being the Wayne Gretzky assist person and seeing the other person shine sometimes is even more fun.
Right. You do things outside of the show, obviously. You perform. You're a musician.
Yeah, it's my true passion.
I was just going to say, how often do you really get to go out there and do this?
Yeah, well, another thing in my office that our listeners can't see, there's a picture of me, my dad, and Jim Peterick, who wrote Eye of the Tiger, and he's from the Ides of March, a Chicago legend.
Jim Peterick is amazing just for the fact that every time he turns around, he got into another band and had a hit song.
Unbelievable. Survivor, Ides of March. Yeah, he's a true talent. I'm one of the nicest guys ever.
Yeah, yeah.
So my 40th birthday on the show, they surprised me. They flew in a bunch of friends. Well, they flew themselves, and I don't think our budget's that big. Bunch of people were all the whole audience was filled with people I knew, all my friends and family.
Yeah.
And then Peterick was playing on stage and my dad flew in, and my dad's a professional musician.
Right.
So we got to play on stage. It's one of my fondest memories on the show. But yeah, music has been something that's been in my blood for a long time, because my dad, fun fact, has a song on Pulp Fiction.
Yes, that's
the song,
right.
Surf Rider.
That's right.
Another thing I got to tell Travolta, and I'll never forget what Travolta said, that's one of the coolest factoids anyone's ever told me. Factoids, who uses that word?
A man who has his own jet in his backyard, that's who.
That's right, that's right, that's right. So he had a band called The Lively Ones. He got to open for Sonny and Cher, The Beach Boys.
Yeah.
He's got some music stories.
Sure.
So I remember being a little kid and just being fascinated by just watching him play and just being like in awe, like I want to do that.
Yeah.
And my dad bought me a little ukulele. Tried to learn how to play it, got frustrated.
Yeah.
Turned 13, I'm like, Dad, I want an electric guitar. Buys me an electric guitar.
Yeah.
Strummed it a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I was like too busy chasing girls. And then my dad's like, if you just learn how to play the guitar, you don't have to chase girls. So Tom Petty always said, like, Tom Petty's like, I started playing the guitar because that's the only way I can get a dating life. So I put it down again.
Yeah.
And then when I got in my early 20s, I remember watching a late night infomercial. It's this late night infomercial, this guy named Esteban.
Okay.
He's a heck of a Spanish flamenco style player.
Yeah.
And he's selling this guitar with a little video to show you how to play it.
Right.
And my father and I weren't living in the same state. I was living in Colorado at the time. So I bought the guitar. And I'm like, I'm going to learn how to play this guitar until it kills me. I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, I'm going to learn how to play the guitar. Yeah. I'm like, oh, really? Going to stick with it this time? I did. I never put it down since. And I never thought I would be releasing original music or playing in bars and charity events. But over time, it's been something that's just kind of developed. And I always tell my bosses, if I could make a living being a singer, I would leave this job today.
You're listening to Nude Hippo, the podcast. We'll be right back after this. Stick around.
If you like Back to You with me, Howard Sudbury, and Steve Baskerville, check us out on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. And this week, we had a chance to talk to the coach, Steve.
Not only do we find out how he's feeling now, what he's been doing, we find out what he had for lunch, too.
And Steve Baskerville tells an interesting story in which he tells the punchline at the beginning of the story. Are you glad I threw that in?
Thank you very much. And we also find out why we've been away for a while.
That's exactly right. Back to you with Howard and Steve. Great talk radio isn't dead. It just moved to a better place. RadioMisfits.com.
This is Minutia Men with Rick and Dave.
We are happy to have Mark Cuban on the show. Is there a way that we can monetize my daughter's eye rolls? Can you do anything? Can you figure that out?
So my daughter, I'll let her put on Sirius XM, whatever song she likes. We pull into this half circle when I drop her off. And, you know, she's ready to get out of the car. I'll say, I love you, sweetie. Bam! Blast it. And, you know, and if it's a song I know the words to, then I'm singing along, too. And her friends are looking at me and looking at the car.
Oh, man, there's nothing more embarrassing than dad singing along.
Oh, man, it's like, Kiki, do you love me?
Tony Lasano Podcast and Opie Production on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
RadioMisfits.com.
And we're back. Now more of the interview.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite things that you've done was a song. It was that song for your brother. What was it, Chicago?
It's called Chicago. It's still on YouTube and on iTunes. And we donated all the proceeds to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
Yeah.
I lost a brother that way. And it took me many, many years to open up and speak about that.
Right.
And finally, I was like, you know, we got to do something positive in my brother's honor and everybody who's lost people that way.
Yeah.
It's something that's finally in the last year or so, maybe even since Robin Williams died.
Right.
A little more light is being shed on that.
Right.
A serious, serious issue.
Right.
So I wanted to do something fun and something light. I didn't want it to be a sad song. So I wrote this song about our city, kind of an homage to Chicago. And it was really fun. Yeah. And so then everyone keeps asking me, when are you going to do another song? And I was like, oh, man. So finally, I just finished a new original that I'm going to be putting on Spotify and shooting a video for. And I will put the proceeds to something else that I'm passionate about. And I'm still kind of, I have so many different things. I just lost my mom to cancer 2 years ago. And we've all lost so many people. So might do something for that organization or something else that we can help out with.
It's very cool because, like you said, there was a time when certain things weren't talked about. And now, I mean, I talked to my mother, and there was situations back then people didn't talk about if they were raped by family members or whatever, all these dark things, but everyone knew about it, you know? And the people who had whatever issue was happening to them, they just thought it was their problem, so they kept it to themselves. Now it's all out there, and I think it helps. I think it helps tremendously because people don't feel like they're alone.
Right. Well, if you think about it, it's crazy. So we're in this media business, right? We're supposed to be transparent, but you know, the old way of thinking that was suicide didn't get written up in the newspaper or broadcast on TV, remember? Because they didn't want to encourage other people to do it. That was the thinking back in the early days of TV, radio, newspaper. Unless it was a major celebrity, it just never got talked about, and that families didn't talk about it. It was very taboo, and it was a lot of shame and guilt comes with it. There's a big stigma and misunderstanding because we didn't teach our kids about this in school. Finally, kids are learning about it and learning about, you know, mental health.
Right.
And we keep closing down mental health facilities around our country and in our state. It's It kills me to know about,
right,
to hear about all that. So the fact that you know, certain people that have a little bit of clout or a little bit of a platform can speak on it really helps.
Put a spotlight
and
on it.
Yeah, it spotlights it. And you know what really helped me was Tony Dungy, the Hall of Fame coach. Mm-hmm. He lost a son to suicide, and I remember my twin brother said, "You need to read his book." Mm-hmm. And I read his book. And I think it's called Quiet Courage. I'm blanking on the name at the moment, but I've actually read it a couple of times. And I remember thinking, here's a Hall of Fame football coach, Super Bowl winning coach, rich, famous, seems like a beloved person.
Right.
And he went through this
and
was able to share it. And it kind of gave me the courage to say, you know what? Like, I need to do something.
Right.
Because I do have somewhat of a platform. And I need to speak out about it to help others, because it was cathartic for me to hear about, here, this guy had it all.
Right.
His son obviously had it all because of his dad, and he still decided to end his life that way.
Well, because it's a misconception thinking that if you have money and fame or anything else, that means that you're happy.
Right.
Happiness doesn't come from any of that.
Right.
May make life easier at times.
Sure.
But not happy.
Right. And we learned that from Robin Williams, too. So I just think that now the sheets have been, you know, pulled on that, and I'm happy for that. As hard as it is talking about that, and talking about my brother Zach, who was only 20 years old, we just celebrated his 10-year.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we try to celebrate his life,
right?
But it's difficult because you always think about the end.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But think about all the people you're exposing and saving.
The letters I get and the Facebook messages I get really. I was frightened. It was the scariest. I've never been more frightened. I've never had my heart beat faster than the day I decided to publicly talk about it. We did a show on mental health, and my heart was like beating out of my chest. I was like sweating, and I went into my producer's office that morning, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. And Ji Suki, who was on our show at the time, she lost a father that way. Mm-hmm. So now you have two people out of the three on our desk, both directly affected. And she was really having panic attacks, and I was the one convincing her that she's got to do it when I didn't know I wanted to do it. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And for the next month, the outpouring of love and the letters really helped cross-cancel the number of people that would come up to me in public, because I wasn't ready for it. Mm-hmm. When I was at dinner on a Friday night and someone would come up and go, oh, my God, that was amazing that you shared that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it made me almost cry, and it would like kind of ruin my Friday night.
Right. Yeah.
But now it doesn't. Now I'm thankful that they come up and they say, hey, that was brave of you, but I'm thankful that you did it. You know, I've done the American Foundation for Suicide Walk several years. I spoke at it as keynote speaker a couple of years, but it took a long time for me. Yeah. 5 years I didn't speak about it at all.
Yeah.
My closest friends, a couple of them knew, a couple of them didn't know.
When did you realize, was that the moment when you realized that you had a voice, that actually people are affected by what you say, what you do? Because a lot of times people in the media or showbiz, anywhere, they don't really realize there are actually people watching or listening to this. And then when they get the feedback, they're like, oh, you know, I'm actually talking to people. Was that the moment, or did you know before?
100%.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it. And... you know, I think there's, I don't know, I'm a pretty humble guy too, so I'm thinking, how big is my platform really?
Right.
And is it going to really matter? Is this just going to put me through a lot of emotional distress, and then it's just going to be voyeurism and it's going to move on?
Yeah.
But that really was I think, the moment where I felt like, wow, people care.
Yeah.
People are affected.
Sure. Yeah,
and you can actually make a difference.
Yeah, I've always explained it this way. I went, there are groups of people who are very affected by whether it's radio, TV, newspaper. They attach to these personalities, and you don't realize, like, I remember everyone I listened to when I was a kid on the radio, you know, and I'm sure that some of these people who are no longer in the business would be surprised. I could still rattle off their names and what they said, you know, so they may have not gotten all of Chicago, but they got in a portion of Chicago, and who knows where those people are now. But the point is, you affect people wherever you are, and it's hard to know that when you're looking at a glass camera lens, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get that impact, though you have a studio audience,
which
so it kinda
helps. Yeah. It does help. It helps having that immediate feedback, whether it's something powerful that you say or something funny that you say. That
right.
or a joke you thought was funny and it wasn't.
Right, it falls flat.
You kind of do have that immediate like gauge.
Was that, is this your first audience then?
I did a sports show.
The sports show
I did, we did it at ESPN Zone, which is now Eataly.
Yeah, right, it is. Yes, it is.
And so we had a live audience then too, so that helps, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Because doing the sports on Channel 7, I'm sure not too much feedback.
We just have the people in the glass window and some people flashing occasionally.
Well, that can be distracting. But minus the people outside that window, it's a very quiet room.
It really is. There's only three people in the room. It's like the anchors, and now we have robotic cameras.
Right.
So the floor director, that's it.
Right, I know.
Other than that, it's like you're talking to yourself.
Right. And you don't realize a good portion. I mean, logically, you know this, but you don't comprehend it while you're doing it.
You really don't. Yeah. When people send pictures while I'm on the air. Yeah. That they're at the nail salon and you're on, or you're at the bar. You're like, wow, people really have that thing on.
You know?
Because you do forget.
Yeah.
But you know, it's funny because now we've been doing the show 8 years. I've been here 13. We had a little girl that was at the show. Well, she's not little anymore. She's probably 21.
Mm.
So a young girl at the show. And she said, hey, I've been watching you on TV since I was a little girl. And I go, oh, man, you're making me feel old. And I go, she goes, I actually have a picture with you.
Yeah.
She showed me a picture of her when she was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
And here we are. And I was like, wow, this is happening.
Right.
This is happening. Right. Like, I used to be the young guy in my 20s. I came to town.
You're slowly becoming Brad Palmer.
Yeah. I'm becoming the professor. And then Gene Greco's like, hey, buddy, you trust me. It only gets worse. He's like, wait till your babysitters and all of that start coming to your show.
Right, right, you know? Right.
That's what I have, you know.
You clearly have friends outside the business. I'm sure a mess of them from before you were even in the business. How are you with them compared to, you know, now that you're Ryan Cheverini instead of just being Ryan?
You know, it's so funny because when I go back home to Southern Cal, if I go visit,
you're just Ryan.
It's like we don't get any preferential treatment. We don't get free drinks ever anywhere. We don't get anything comped.
Right,
we wait in line like everybody else.
Right.
But it's nice. You know, I wear sandals and a hat and you get a nice little break, which is cool. But when they come here, I think they forget. So like my sister-in-law comes here, my brother, and he's like, this is weird. Like, this is weird.
Right.
Like how to see people like so impressed with the you and the show.
Right.
And I go, I know, just keep going with it. Shh, just go with it.
Exactly.
You know, but my family thinks it's funny because when I'm home, I'm just a regular dude. And then when I'm here, there might be a lot more preferential treatment. So they're just in awe of the fact that the people actually care that much. They laugh about it mainly. Yeah.
Well, you've been doing a very cool job. I've been enjoying watching you over the years. And you are exactly the same person on TV as what you're hearing now, as what you're in real life. And I'm very happy that I could call you a friend, because whenever I need anything, you're there.
I appreciate that, Tony. Hey, seriously, anything for you. I hope that we get to work together.
Absolutely.
I really do.
So I appreciate this. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Tony.
Listen, subscribe, and rate Nude Hippo the Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Just search for Radio Misfits.
All right, so that was the interview with Ryan Cheverini. I want to tell a quick story about this. This interview almost didn't happen. I mean, it was recorded. And then, see, here's the thing. I started Nude Hippo, the TV show, back in the late 90s, and the videotapes that we recorded on, and this is not a joke, was the size of your couch. That's the size of the tapes. We had to lug those around. And through the years, they have shrunk. And I remember back in the 2000s when there was just, we were using mini DVs. And I kept on going, oh, these are going to get lost. These are tiny little cassettes about 2.5 inches long. And then we switched over to SD cards. I'm like, oh boy. Now it's just nothing. Now it's just the size of a quarter. Well, we're now in the digital age, and this interview that we did with Ryan got lost. It got mixed up in the archives of all the Opie shows, and I turned to you, Kimmy, one day, and what did I say?
You asked me what happened to like episode 13, was it, or 12?
I believe it was. I believe the number was, the file number was 028.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you said that out of nowhere. Where's 028? I did not understand at all what you were meaning. And you, every time you saw me or would write to me randomly asking about that, and then I'm like, I don't know what you're talking
right.
about.
And what you have to also understand is we produce a bunch of different shows. So it's like, what show are we talking about? It's not just one series. You know, it could be Ann Friends. It could be Los Angeles Friends. It could be Free Kicks. It could be Minutia Men. It could be Good in Chicago. It could be... Now it's Nude Hippo. So, yeah. So we had a hard time finding it, and we dug it up, and here it is. I'm glad we did. I was very happy about this interview.
I was freaking out because I was like, that was such a good interview that if we lost it, I was having a panic because I was like, oh, man. Then again, going back, there wouldn't have been a terrible thing at all.
Yeah, you wouldn't have mind that one bit.
No. Okay. I got a mug out of it, too.
That's right. All right, so if you enjoy this or want to find out more about Nude Hippo, there's a whole history that you could check out. There's videos from the old show. There's going to be more of these podcast episodes. Just go to nudehippo.com. That's your source for everything. It'll take you to the Twitter pages. It'll take you to the Facebook. It'll take you to the MySpace page. It'll take you everywhere. Nudehippo.com. And I want to thank Kimmy Spoons from Ann Friends for producing this episode. Every week there will be a different member from the Ann Friends crew here producing, and this week, Kimmy Spoons. Yeah, you could close the show out now, Kimmy.
Oh, well, I'll just throw out some special thanks over here, like to Tony Lasano from opishows.com. Opie is hippo spelled backwards.
That's true.
O-P-P-I-H. Mm-hmm. Shows.com. And Ed Silla from RadioMisfits.com.
Until next time, from all of us here at Nude Hippo, the podcast, stick around.
Is that the same ending you do?
I've been doing it at Nude Hippo forever.
The proceeding was a presentation of Opie Productions. Find our other great shows wherever you find podcasts, including opishows.com. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of Opie Productions.
Tony, can you shut up?
Hey, coming soon to the Radio Misfits Podcast Network and Friends, starring me, Tommy.
And me, Kimmy.
And me, Sam.
Come meet your new best friends.
Hey, if you want to listen to our show, this is what it sounds like exactly.
It's all about those conversations you can only have with your true friends. So come meet your new friends, Tommy.
Kimmy.
Sam.
Right here with Ann Friends.
Me want you as friends.
RadioMisfits.com.
Quick, Lou, what's your favorite car color?
I'd say Lou likes blue.
Lou likes blue? Blue's pretty good, but really I prefer silver. But regardless of our color preferences, when it comes to cars, you'll never know what you'll hear on the Car Guys Report, Informed Automotive. I'm Mark Vernon.
I'm Lou Costable.
Join us for the Car Guys Report, a Tony Lasano podcast, an Opie production on the Radio Misfits Podcast Network.
Silver. Really, silver?